The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session with the Honorable William S. Greenberg presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good afternoon. This is Judge Greenberg. I'm joined by Judges Meredith and Lauer. We're convened today via video conference to consider arguments in the matter of Veterans Legal Advocacy Group versus the Secretary, case number 28291. Will counsel, beginning with petitioner's counsel, enter your appearances, please?
Yes, my name is Harold Hoffman for the Veterans Legal Advocacy Group, and I'm here with co-counsel Megan Gentile.
For the government.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Melissa Timbers arguing on behalf of the Secretary, and at co-counsel's table is Megan Kroll.
All right. I understand counsel for the petitioner has reserved 25 minutes. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's out of 30. So you've got five left.
I understand, Your Honor.
All right. Proceed. Go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court. VetLag's address changed, and we did everything the Secretary has suggested to fix it and make sure the VA sent our client's mail to the right place. We're here today because we keep losing fees, our clients keep losing their benefits, and we keep losing clients because the Secretary repeatedly and negligently sends our mail to the wrong place. The Secretary is about to give the court a lot of excuses for why this is happening, but that up. He tried to blame us for his mistakes. However, we've done everything he suggested, and he keeps sending mail to the wrong place. He might be about to tell you that he fixed the problem. He's told the court this before. Don't believe him. We have documents just in the past few weeks that he has sent to the wrong address. He's probably going to blame his own technology, but he is responsible for that technology. And based on his filings, we know what he is going to come up here and say today, that no one has been hurt by the VA sending documents to the wrong address. False. Our clients have been hurt. They have lost benefits. They've suffered many, many unreasonable delays, and we've been hurt by losing fees. I can tell you some things for sure you aren't going to hear the Secretary say today. He's not going to apologize to anyone for this. He won't admit that he's hurting veterans, and he definitely won't tell this court, and he won't tell us that he will stop sending our mail to the wrong place. And I know this. We nearly settled this petition last week, and the Secretary wouldn't settle it for one reason. We got hung up on one little statement, and that was he refused to agree to stop sending mail to our incorrect address. His excuses disrespect this court's authority and integrity. He thinks there's no way this court would ever order him to fix his negligent mailing practices and would absolutely not impose sanctions on him. He doesn't even think the court has the power to do that. This court should sanction the Secretary to deter him from sending our mail to the wrong place and to restore his respect for this court.
Could you be more specific in how you or your clients, the individuals that your group represents, are they clients, individual clients?
Yes, Your Honor. I am here
how
today.
Assume for the moment that it makes a difference, and it may not, but how have they specifically been harmed, or how have the lawyers been harmed?
Well, if we're going to get to, for instance, at this court, we have, and I'm sorry, I don't have a table here in front of me. After a remand from this court, in which cases were expedited or ordered by this court to be expedited, we had that three, and this was just quick search just to make sure we had a few. Three times that the VA delayed cases by sending stuff to the wrong address. So they're hurt by that delay. We had a client who just 2 days ago emailed me and is like, Mr. Hoffman, I'm sorry, but I got this letter from the Board of Veterans Appeals. I don't know what it means, but it says they won't docket my appeal because it was filed years earlier. That client, we only had that document because we had waited 5 years for a decision after we filed an appeal, after we were waiting for an SOC, and we never received this. So we filed a petition in this court. And after we filed the petition, the Secretary produced the SOC and said, oh, we sent this 5-6 years ago. And then we took that document and I was like, okay, fine. We'll dismiss this petition. We'll file an appeal to it at the regional office, at the AOJ. And we did. And we included an argument saying like, hey, we got this from the secretary while filing this petition, docket number, I don't have the number right in front of me. And you should count this as on time because I'm filing it right after I got it from
the secretary. My question was, how have your clients actually been harmed? Again, assuming it matters. Did they lose any money?
Yes, Your Honor.
They lost money by reason of the delay?
Yes, Your Honor, because they have missed appeal periods.
Right. Go ahead. For my colleagues, as I mentioned, Mr. Hoffman has reserved 25 minutes for rebuttal. Do either of you, because we're sort of running out of time, either of you have any questions now, or would you like to wait until his 25 minutes rebuttal? Judge Meredith, anything?
I do have a couple questions.
Go ahead.
First, I want to talk a little bit about standing and jurisdiction. In American Legion, this court, the en banc court, basically concluded that a veteran service organization did not have associational standing to bring a petition here because us granting a petition has to lead to a board decision in the name of the petitioner. And I know it was talking about associational standing, but does the reasoning of American Legion apply here that Veterans Legal Advocacy Group could not have in the organization's name standing before this court?
No, Your Honor, and this is why. In American Legion, VetLeg and American Legion are very different organizations. American Legion, in that case, the court discussed how American Legion has a special carve-out in regulations, talk about how it represents veterans. Unlike them, VetLeg represents them as a law firm. And under 38 CFR 14.629C, law firms can represent veterans at the VA. And I don't think there's anything that would stop VetLeg, Veterans Advocacy Group, from being a party in a board case in which if it was in a fee dispute with a client and it appealed a decision by the AOJ to the board, I think VetLeg could be that party.
Even though in American Legion, their ultimate conclusion was that the board can only take appeals from individuals, perhaps an individual lawyer, but could only take appeals from individuals, and that this court in turn only had the authority to take petitions from individuals.
I actually think that American Legion court was not so broad and said it can't really review things from a VSO because VSO doesn't have a stake in the cases. They can't receive fees. They don't have a close relationship with the client. I mean, American Legion said they have 2.6 million members. VetLeg has 100, 125 clients. We have a stake. We charge. It is a low bonus. We are a nonprofit, but it is a low bono rate, but we still have a stake in those fees. We do have a close relationship, a attorney-client relationship with our client. And what American Legion stands for is you don't get standing because you're not harmed, American Legion. Your clients are harmed. And you can't be the subject of a board decision because VA action or inaction cannot hurt you. VA action or inaction hurts VetLeg directly. It hurts its attorneys directly. And it, of course, hurts its clients directly.
The language I was talking about in American Legion in the concluding paragraphs was that Congress has limited this court's jurisdiction to addressing only appeals and petitions brought by individual claimants. But I do want to move on since we're already on extra time here. You talked I believe it was your March 2021 reply about what board decision could us granting a writ lead to. And you talked about your clients having brought litigation over misdirected mail and that has led to board decisions and court appeals. But how would the court issuing an order to try to prevent the mail from being misaddressed lead to board decisions? Would it not essentially be preventing the type of litigation that you discussed in your March 2021 reply?
The answer to that is yes, Your Honor. It would avoid that type of litigation. However, it has already, this problem has led to board decisions. I listed in one of my responses, I think the June might be the March, that we've already appealed numerous cases to this court and received JMRs and decisions in favor of ours because of late filed appeals that were only late filed because of the secretary's negligence, mismailing the documents. So they have already been the subject.
That the court granting the writ that you've asked for would then lead to a board decision.
I actually think we could just go back to Ms. Tice, who just was told by the board that they won't docket her case because it's 6 years late. I think we could take that court order, and even though that court order would be prospective, we could be like, look, the court's upset about this. You should probably fix it now. Otherwise, we're just going to get a remand from the court, and you're going to have to do it then. So I think that could lead to a board decision that way. I think it could be used as evidence in favor of even retrospective application.
Lead to a board decision regardless of whether the court acts to essentially try to correct the poor mailing practices.
It should be the letter of the law, Your Honor. However, because the VA still hasn't sent a link her appeal on time, they're just saying, hey, we're not even going to entertain this. We're not even going to docket your case. Now, I will appeal that letter, and then they'll send a letter saying, oh, it's not on time. 6 years later, I will be in front of the board saying, hey, this was on time. And then we'll be up at the court.
So just a couple more questions, if I could, Judge Greenberg. You've argued that VA's mailing practices violate 50-104 and 50-904, specifically as to your organization. Has your organization asked VA to issue an appealable decision as to whether their mailing practices violate those statutory provisions, specifically as to your group or just generally? Is that a 5-7-A question that they could or should issue a decision as to?
So that is, we feel like we've done everything we can at the VA. We can't ask for rulemaking because this is already a rule that they are supposed to mail it to us. So we can't go to the federal circuit and ask for that. There's no such thing as a claim for the VA to mail something correctly. We have to handle on an individual basis. For 2/3 of our clients, we've realized, have had things mailed to the wrong address. We don't know them anymore because we don't know what has been mismailed. But we have not done that, and I don't think we could do that. I think the VA's a document like that and shreds it. They wouldn't know what to do.
Is it your position then that there's no 511A question here? There's no question that the secretary could answer as to whether its mailing practices are violating the statute? And if so, if the secretary and the board couldn't answer that question, how could we?
We're not asking the court to answer any question about the VA's mailing practices. We're asking the court to tell the VA to stop mailing things incorrectly, which they're already required to do under statute. We're just asking the court to enforce a law that's already there. It's not the court's business how VA fixes it. It's not the court's business to tell the VA how to fix it. It's the court's job, and this is why we've asked for the court to tell the VA, stop breaking the law.
What statute? What statute, counsel?
There's 5104A, and give me just a second. They are violating 38 U.S.C. 5904A. They're violating 38 U.S.C. 5701B, the right for our clients' adjudication documents to be sent to us. And that's their attorney's right. They're violating their right, their 38 CFR 14.632. That stops us from, we can't perform our duties under 14.632, because what they've really done is they've taken away these veterans' right to representation, is what they've done. We can't represent them when we're not getting the adjudication documents. They violated 14.629, our right to represent veterans in front of the VA, 14.636 and 3637, our right to recover fees and expenses in VA agency cases. And this is just us. I mean, with our clients, the list gets even longer. It's 38 U.S.C. 5111, 7112, unreasonable delays, the time value of money, which is it?
I understand. I understand. Judge Lauer, do you have anything at this point?
Thank you, Judge Greenberg. Mr. Hoffman, understanding the secretary's and the department's responsibilities and your estimate that approximately 2/3 of your clients have had documents mailed to the wrong address, is there some reasonable alternative to this problem? For example, could you notify your clients to provide any documents received to your office? Would you view that as a reasonable alternative here?
Yes, Your Honor. Actually, when we have our client sign a contract agreement and a 2122A, they also get another piece of paper that says, you must tell us anytime you get something from the VA, The VA often doesn't tell us. Now, the reason that we're not up here with 200 petitions every year is because most of our clients do. However, all of our clients assume that we're getting the documents and taking care of business. Now, I'm going to point to one particular client where it doesn't matter. He works for the State Department in Africa, way out in Africa. He's not a big city. He gets mail 6 months late. He has missed deadlines galore because he doesn't get the documents. And by the time he gets them and emails them to me, I'm like, well, we're late on that. I write a letter to the VA, and to the VA's credit, a lot of times they're just like, oh, we're sorry for the delay. We'll try to do better next time. They don't ever do better, but they at least say that. But many times I get in a situation like Ms. Tice where we're going to be appealing that already for another 5 years just to get the VA to say like, okay, fine, it's on time. Your appeal's on time. So we tell our clients in every time before they hire us, you must understand the VA doesn't send the documents to us that you think they are. You need to tell us every time you get every little thing from the VA, which, by the way, which is good practice anyways, but that eats up so much time. We almost have to have an employee just to deal with making sure clients give us documents, making sure that the VA knows when they mailed something wrong, making sure the VA knows our address, letting the VA know after every mismailing, we send a letter to the VA. Hey, messed up. Fix our address, please. We've sent numerous emails to OGC, and sorry, not Group 7, but the General Counsel in charge of accreditation. Please fix our address. What do we got to do here? And yet we get emails. We got an email just a few months ago from a VA employee at OGC saying, hey, your address is all wrong, and we don't know what to do about it because in one system it says this, you need to fix it. And we're like, yeah, it is fixed. That's actually correct. It's nonstop.
Ms. Lauer?
I have no further questions.
All right. Thank you, counsel. We'll deal with anything else on your rebuttal. All right?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Let's hear from the government, please.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. The secretary respectfully requests that this court dismiss or in the alternative deny this petition. First, dismissal is warranted because petitioner has failed to meet its burden of establishing that it has standing to bring this petition. Second, and in the alternative, this court should deny the petition because petitioner fails to demonstrate entitlement to the relief that it seeks. Finally, the secretary submits that sanctions in this matter are not warranted. Before turning to the merits of our arguments, Your Honors, the secretary would like to express his sincerest apologies to the individual veterans who have incurred delays caused by VA's failures to adequately update addresses for private attorneys. The secretary acknowledges that this is a failure of VA's technology and that it is something that the agency is rectifying. The secretary also can attest that all addresses for the vet lag attorneys identified in this petition have been updated within VA's central database. Turning to the merits of this petition, Your Honors, the secretary submits that petitioner has failed to meet its burden of proving to this court that it has standing to bring this petition. First, as to petitioner's claims of direct standing, the secretary submits that petitioner has failed to identify any statutory right that it possesses, which has been impaired by VA's mismailings. For example, although petitioner asserts that it has direct standing because its attorneys have a right to, although petitioner asserts that it has direct standing because its attorneys have a right under 38 USC 5904A to represent clients throughout the claims process, petitioner fails to explain how VA's mismailings have infringed upon that right. Specifically, petitioner does not allege that VA has failed to recognize it or any of its attorneys to practice before VA. It does not allege that VA has suspended it from practicing. It does not allege that VA has prohibited it from charging fees. And it does not allege that VA has limited the amount that it may charge clients. Thus, although the petitioner has identified a legal right, it fails to articulate how that action, how the action at issue here, the agency's mismailings, has infringed upon its rights under Section 5904A. Similarly, petitioner's arguments that VA has impeded its ability to collect fees pursuant to 38 CFR 14636 are insufficient to establish harm. Petitioner has failed to establish or explain how VA's mailing practices have limited its ability to charge for services or how VA has limited the amount that it may charge its clients. Although asserting generally that VA has impeded its ability to collect fees, petitioner fails to support this allegation with any specificity. As the Supreme Court noted in Worth v. Selden, a plaintiff must allege specific concrete facts demonstrating that the challenged practices harm him and that he would personally benefit in a tangible way from the court's intervention. But here, in support of its arguments that VA has impaired its ability to collect fees, petitioner has failed petitioner has identified only extremely generalized or theorized harms. For example, petitioner argues that the time spent correcting VA's past mailing errors have diverted resources away from additional veterans petitioner could have helped. However, this is insufficient to establish harm because petitioner fails to provide any specific evidence in support of this assertion, and instead merely theorizes that it could have helped additional veterans had it not allocated some unspecified amount of time correcting VA's mailing errors. Thus, and again, while petitioner has a right to collect fees, it fails to explain how VA's mismailings have impeded that ability to collect those fees. Finally, to the extent that petitioner asserts that it has been harmed by VA's mailing a copy of decision involving benefits of other individuals pursuant to 5104A to an outdated address, petitioner fails to plead with any specificity how its own rights have been harmed. Though petitioner, as a representative of its clients, has a right to receive notice of its client's decisions, that requirement ensures that petitioner's clients receive fair process for their individual claims. More to the point, and as petitioner has acknowledged in both his pleadings and today at oral argument, petitioner has in fact received copies of these decisions, although they have been delayed. And also he acknowledges that timeliness of a decision is something that he can appeal on behalf of his clients. Accordingly, petitioner fails to plead with any specificity how it has direct standing to bring this instant petition. As to third-party standing, Your Honor, petitioner also fails to establish that it has standing to bring this petition on behalf of its clients. As an initial matter, the Supreme Court has recognized in limited circumstances that a third party can bring a litigation on to assert the rights of another. In doing so, the Supreme Court has held that two factors are to be examined. The first is whether the party asserting the right must have a close relationship with the person who possesses this right. And second, the party asserting the right must also show that there is a hindrance to the possessor's right and ability to protect their own interests. The court should find that both factors weigh against petitioner's assertions that it has third-party standing.
Well, just a minute, counsel, if I may. The vet lag, I guess, is how they're referring to it. But this organization is actually a group of lawyers who represent individual veterans. Why isn't that sufficient to give standing?
Your Honor, this court in the past, in Reece Stanley, this court has recognized that the attorney-client relationship is something that can weigh in favor of third-party standing, but in general, it's insufficient. And in fact, in Inree Stanley, this court found that just an assertion of the attorney-client relationship was insufficient to establish third-party standing.
Well, why shouldn't that be changed?
It shouldn't be changed here, Your Honor, because petitioner hasn't, also going to the second factor, petitioner hasn't shown any hindrance that his clients face to appealing the timeliness of their decisions. And also, as we alerted the court in our Rule 30B letter, this Federal Circuit recently relied on Inree Stanley in Military Veterans Advocacy versus Secretary of Veterans Affairs. So it's the Secretary's position that Inree Stanley remains good law, especially on the fact that the attorney-client relationship is insufficient in and of itself to bring third-party standing.
Well, as I understand the argument, it's not third-party standing. They say we're the lawyers for these individual veterans, and we're not getting the correct mail, timely mail, important communications from the secretary. You opened your argument by apologizing for these mistakes. What is the problem that the secretary can't correct its method of dealing with lawyers for veterans?
Your Honor, yes, we conceded at the outset of our argument that it has been a failure of our technology. But as we also stated at the outset of our argument, we have corrected, at least to the degree that we have updated the addresses for the veterans attorneys that have been identified in this petition. Those addresses have been updated within VA Central database, which is the database that is pulled from four mailings.
So you say
we've corrected the problem.
Are you arguing that the case is moot because you've already corrected all of the alleged problems that the appellant argues about here?
Yes, Your Honor, we are arguing that it's moot because we've done the requested act here, which is update the addresses for the vet lag attorneys within VA Central database.
All right. proceed.
I'd actually like to ask some questions on the point you just made. So are you saying that the individual files for each of VetLag's clients has been updated with the correct address now?
Your Honor, no, we are not saying that the each individual files, specifically because we have not been provided the individual file numbers. However, the way VA's databases operate is that it's through a POA code, a power of attorney. So there's a database that houses the POAs and the addresses where correspondence is to be mailed. And that database has been updated. So for all future mailings, when an RO pulls something, it'll be pulling from that database, which will have the corrected address for all the VetLag attorneys, which have been identified in this petition. And
when did that happen? Have misdirected mailings occurred since that centralized address was changed?
Your Honors, the updates have occurred on a rolling basis. Most recently, I think it was in April of this past month. But if this court, you know, desires the exact dates when each one was updated, we could provide that if necessary. But again, we conceded that our systems are flawed and we are continuously updating our technology. And in response to this petition, we have updated the central database with the addresses for the petitioners identified in this pleading. And therefore, going forward, the mismailing should no longer be an issue.
What type of evidence or proof could you provide to the court that this problem has, in your view, been corrected?
I do not want to speak out of turn for the agency. I know that if this court were to request some sort of proof, that we could provide something. We could provide additional assurances for you.
What about an affidavit from some responsible official at the VA that the matter has been corrected?
Yes, Your Honors, we could get a declaration or an affidavit to that degree.
Didn't mean to interrupt Judge Meredith.
You're fine. Thank you.
Anything else, Judge Meredith, at the moment?
A couple more questions.
Sure.
What options do you think VetLag has for ensuring that these misdirected mailings do not occur in the future? If this court isn't the appropriate forum for bringing these concerns, what is? What options do they have?
Sure, Your Honor. And as you sort of alluded to in questioning petitioner, the injury that suffered here is not to petitioner, it's to the clients. So the clients have the ability to appeal the timeliness of their decisions, which petitioner himself acknowledges, and he concedes that he is actually actively doing at this moment. For petitioner, we have updated the addresses, so this problem should not be a reoccurring issue going forward. In addition, we provided guidance in our response to the April court order. And additionally, the secretary has, we've been talking with the stakeholder or the parties at who control and oversee the mailing and addressing. And we can state that there will be a policy, and that policy will be published on VA's OGC website that gives guidance for attorneys going forward in the future of how to alert VA of their change in address.
Judge Lauer, do you have anything at the moment?
I do. Thank you, Judge Greenberg. Ms. Timbers, in response to the court's order going back to April, the response from the government was that and this is in response to a question about the proper way for attorneys to advise the Department of current address. The response was the proper, most effective procedure for an attorney to update his or her contact information with the VA is to ensure he or she receives the necessary communications pursuant to Section 5104 is to submit an updated VA Form 21-22A for the individual claimants he or she represents with the updated address in Block 8. During oral arguments, you indicated that that may not be the best way. You referred to OGC's database, I believe, as being the system of record. So My first question is, which is correct? And my second question would be, and obviously we'll hear from Mr. Hoffman, but I believe that Mr. Hoffman is going to say, based on subsequent responses, that they've done that and since April, and it has not worked. So first question is, which is the correct way for an attorney to, one-stop shopping, be assured that his or her address is correct? And if that works, then why are we here? And I understand, you may be able to produce an affidavit, but I would like responses to those questions, please.
Sure, Your Honor. In response to your first question, both methods would be correct. I didn't mean to contradict anything I said in our pleadings. The preferred method is for the attorney to submit an updated VA Form 2122A. And as we alluded to in our pleadings, there are two reasons why VA needs the addresses. One is for OGC's accreditation wing, and the second being for mailings to the attorneys and their clients. And that was where the failure in our technology happened, was that those two databases did not talk to each other. Since this petition has been filed, we have worked to rectify that, and we have updated the address that petitioner has submitted in VA Central database, that is the database that is pulled from for all future mailings. So again, we conceded that there is a flaw in our system. It's something that we have acknowledged. We're fixing it. It's been fixed with regard to these six veterans attorneys. I think that answers your second question, but if not.
Okay, so it's an either or. So the attorney can either do it via the VA Form 21-22A or through the POA going with the through OGC. Is that correct? So either one of those, if an attorney goes that route, that will rectify this problem. Is that what you're stating?
Correct. An attorney can take either route, either submitting that form or alerting OGC. And the breakdown in communication happened between OGC's database and VBA's database. So we've worked to rectify that communication breakdown, and we've updated VetLag's address we've updated petitioner's address within the main database that is used to pull from for future mailings.
And once you do that, and it's updated within the main database, is that going to then be the primary way for other places within the VA to have the current address? In other words, let's use, for example, the RO or the AOJ level. Are they then going to have the correct address? Is this going to be a central database that we can be assured that they will all go to get the correct current address?
Yes, Your Honor. The address database that was updated is VBA, so that encompasses the RO and the AOJ. It's their central database, which has been updated. So for all future mailings, the address will be pulled from those central databases. That central database. And as the addresses have been updated within that central database, all future mismailings will or should be directed to the VetLag address in Arlington, Virginia.
I have no further questions. Thank you.
Excuse me. Anything else, Judge Meredith?
Yes, I have a couple of questions on the jurisdictional issues. As I was talking with the petitioner about, he has asserted that VA's mailing practices, specifically with regard to their organization, are violating the organization's rights under 5904 and 5104. If the petitioner's asked, could the secretary issue an appealable decision as to whether VA has violated those provisions with respect to VetLag? Is there a 511A question there?
No, Your Honor. I think here it's important to point out again that the injuries that petitioner alleges aren't specific injuries to petitioner. They're to petitioner's clients. So those individuals have the right to appeal.
Petitioner alleges that there's harm to both, is my understanding. There's harm to the organization in terms of lost clients, lost compensation.
While petitioner has identified those as hypothetical potential harms, he has not tied them to a specific statute or statutory right that he has under VA's rules and regulations.
Okay. So while they've alleged that their rights stem from 5104 and 5904, is there any 511A question there that the secretary could answer to say our practices are violating those statutes or they're not?
No, Your Honor. Under 5104A, it's is the statute that governs how VA accredits attorneys. And again, petitioner hasn't showed that we've prevented him from being able to represent his clients.
That goes to whether they would prevail. I'm asking, is there a different alternative here, like the Chisholm case or Rosinski cases, where the attorney could come in, maybe as an individual, not as an organization, and say, you're violating these statutes. Would the secretary issue an appealable decision as to that question?
Under Rosinski, no. And also, I think here, Your Honor, that, sorry, I just lost my train of thought. While he's identified statutes and like what VA has rules and regulations to do, he hasn't shown that we are not mailing him things. All he has shown is that VA has a technology problem, which we've conceded, and that again, as we tested this court, we're working to correct and rectify our technology problems. But he hasn't established that we're, you know, neglecting to mail his clients.
These are going to the merits of whether they would prevail, but I will take your answer that you're not conceding that this would be a 511A question.
No, Your Honor. And also, just to distinguish again between the facts of Rosinski, which I think petitioner relied on in his pleadings. In Rosinski, this court identified that VA had a policy that treated VSOs and private accredited attorneys differently, even though per statute, VA was supposed to treat them equally. So Mr. Rosinski identified a policy that VA had that allowed VSOs to access a draft rating decision, which a private attorney was not able to also do. So given that disparate policy that VA had towards two entities, which are supposed to be equal, the court found that Mr. Rosinski had specifically alleged a violation of his rights. So, and we don't think that petitioner here has pled with any specificity that he has any right, and he has not tied any harm that he has identified in any of his pleadings to a specific statutory right.
Anything else, Judge Meredith?
No, thank you.
Judge Lauer?
No, thank you.
All right, counsel, if you'd like to conclude or continue.
Sure, yes, Your Honor.
The argument. Go ahead.
Just in conclusion, Your Honor, we ask that this court either dismiss this petition for lack of standing or deny the writ as moot because petitioner has failed to establish that he lacks alternative means, i.e. that his clients can appeal timeliness of their decisions, and also to the degree that the secretary has already updated VA systems. Thank you.
All right. We'll turn now to Mr. Hoffman. Mr. Hoffman, please try not to repeat the arguments that you've made before and in reply to our questions. I think we understand it, but go ahead and make whatever appropriate rebuttal to the argument.
Sorry, Your Honor. I am only going to some of the things that the secretary just alleged. First of all, the secretary says we don't have a close relationship. We have an attorney-client relationship. Kalaski has made clear that is a close relationship. And I'm just going to quick hit. She says that they started working on it because of the petition. They've known for 5 years. Gal eviscerated them in a report about how bad their mailing practices are. They've known this has been screwed up.
Who eviscerated
years.
Them?
GAO, I'm sorry. The Government Accountability Office in a 2017 report. They have said that they fixed it since April. I have since April given this court some, I can give many more documents that were mismailed to our clients. They say that it doesn't matter. There's an alternative means for us to go around and fix this. There's not really, we don't know how many clients aren't receiving documents, and it doesn't matter for the question of standing anyways. It's case law says, and I'm sorry, I'm going over here to grab a binder. The fact that an injury may be outweighed by other benefits does not negate standing. Our rights were still violated. Ours, VetLag's, VetLag's attorneys, and our clients. All of us have been hurt by this. Stanley and the most recent military veterans advocates cases, that doesn't say anything what she just said it says. It says that they don't have a relationship in which their harm, where their interests are being harmed. You can't have standing because there's all this organizational standing, third party standing, but really what standing comes down to one thing. Were you hurt and can that hurt be redressed? And was that hurt concrete? That's what it comes down to. Those organizations weren't hurt. Stanley's lawyer wasn't hurt, so he couldn't get standing. It's very different than this case where we've been hurt and we don't get concrete harm. I mean, I can sit here and tell you right now, 20-7474, I'm not just going to keep going on because I listed them in one of my responses.
Let me ask you this, just a minute. Does VetLag file its papers on behalf of individual veterans with an attorney's name on it or the word VetLag?
Your Honor, we file all of our contracts with our clients are in VetLag's name. The 2122A is the only thing that has to be there has to be some attorney within VetLag that is the head attorney, and that's the person's name that goes on the 2122A. VA repeatedly sends documents to Veterans Legal Advocacy Group, not to an attorney. I have right here in SSOC where they name VetLag as the POA. The VA calls me all the time about clients who on the 2122A is Megan Gentile, Evan Snipes, Megan Hoffman, Brittany Sutton. They call me all the time and ask, hey, your client is coming up and they've got a hearing. When would be a good time? They're not calling always the person on the 2122A. And that's okay, because under 38 CFR 14.629C1, the VA has recognized law firms represent veterans.
And when you prevail on behalf of your clients, who gets the fees? The organization VetLag or the individual attorneys who are part of VetLag?
By law, it is required that VetLag receive the fees. VetLag is a 501c3. It is legal for its attorneys to receive or be remunerated in any way in something that is tied to their level of success at a law firm. These are very special rules from the IRS about law firm nonprofits, which are extraordinarily rare in the U.S. These fees come into VetLag's account, which, by the way, they go into VetLag's account that the VA recognizes is VetLag's account. It doesn't even have all of the attorney's names on the account. They go into there, and VetLag attorneys receive a paycheck, the same check every month. And it doesn't matter if they just lost 27 cases in a row or won 27 cases in a row. It's not tied to that. They get paid for working at VetLag. We're a nonprofit. Our clients receive a lot of the fees back. It's another story, but we operate the business. Like a law firm, where you don't just eat what you kill. You get paid a salary, whether you're successful. If you're really unsuccessful, maybe that's a bad thing. But
how does it work? I mean, you expect all of the mail or communication for all of the veterans represented by your organization to be sent to one central address. At one point it was Alaska, another point it was Indiana, and now it's Alexandria, Virginia. Is that it? Or somewhere?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. So am I correct? Is that how it works?
That is correct, Your Honor. And even though none of us are in Arlington anymore, we've decided that it's just too risky to change that address, and we're just going to leave it there and pay someone to get our mail all the time.
And where are all these lawyers? Around the country?
Two of us are in Spain, two of us are in Germany, two of us are in Georgia, one up in Maryland, one in Las Vegas. I mean, we're around.
And how is it that you get your clients, generally speaking?
So VetLag, I mean, this goes into a deep history of why we exist and as a 501c3, but ultimately, when we solicit our clients and we represent them here at the court, what we do is we have always promised to continue representing them on remand for a pro bono or low bono fee. We also get referred a lot of cases from for-profit firms that aren't interested in a case because, for instance, there's no money involved. And we are like, yeah, well, that's why we're a nonprofit. We'll do that. You know, people donate to us. So referrals, soliciting clients that show up pro se, especially difficult cases up here at this court. That's really it. We don't advertise.
All right. How many organizations are there like yours? Do you know?
I think there are zero.
Excuse me?
I don't think there are any. I think the closest thing would be NVLSP, but NVLSP is a they have a VSO, so they can't work in the agency and charge fees. We used to charge no fees, almost went out of business. Those fees are vital. We charge very little on the fees compared to private barred attorneys, very little, but we needed just enough to stay in business.
Well, when you make, for example, when you prevail under the EJA or the Equal Access to Justice Act, have you made application for fees as the prevailing party?
Yes, organization? Your Honor. Hundreds of them.
And where do those funds go when you are awarded an EJA fee after an application?
To VetLag, and there are rare, but sometimes a few times they've gone to the clients because the clients had already paid us. And even though we're allowed to double dip, we're totally down with that. And so they mostly just go to VetLag, and then they, you know, that account is what goes to everyone's salary, but no attorney gets more because they win a big case or lose a case.
All right. I understand. I just want to go around with my colleagues for a moment. Mr. Hoffman, just stand fast.
Okay.
Judge Meredith, anything at the moment?
No, thank you.
Judge Lauer?
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. In your response, or your reply, rather, to the Secretary's response going back to June, you had indicated that the VA had not fixed the problem, and you actually included several attachments to that. Are you stating that there are additional, since filing that reply on June 14th, are you stating that there are additional examples of mismailings?
There are many more, Your Honor, but I don't want to just like have like, hey, I got you again, VA, type of moment. I figured if the court wants them, I'll give them to the court. But yes, there are more. It keeps happening. I got one last week.
But you're representing to the court as a lawyer arguing here that these mistakes have continued.
Yes, sir. Right. Yes, Your Honor.
Didn't mean to interrupt Judge Lauer. Go ahead.
No, thank you, Judge Greenberg. I have no further questions.
I do want to get back to a little bit of what the Secretary's counsel suggested we do with this 2122A, and I don't want to read everything I've done, but a lot of these are people who have hired us since we moved to Virginia, and their 2122A says only Virginia. They've never had a 212A for any other address, and they are getting stuff. I mean, we have clients that hired us a year ago, and stuff is being sent to Alaska. I haven't lived in Alaska since 2014. They say that there's no hindrance. Our clients are often receiving documents. It's just, for instance, an SOC that they expect us to appeal. It says at the bottom of it, CC, Veterans Legal Advocacy Group. But it doesn't say what address. And what is happening is it's saying, SOC is saying, CC, Veterans Legal Advocacy Group. What they're not seeing is that's being sent to Alaska. And then when we're filing a VA Form 9, maybe the board will fix on time. A lot of times they don't. And we end up in another 3 or 4 years of appeals just to get a really obvious clerical error by the VA fixed. Central databases, not going to fix it. They say they fixed the central databases months ago, even though they should have fixed them 5 years ago. It hasn't changed anything. Maybe we are seeing less. I don't really know. It's really hard to keep track with so many documents coming in, so many of them mismailed.
How many clients does your group have at the moment?
In the agency, you're on a very few, probably 100 to 150. We've had to reduce the number of clients by a lot because we're spending so much time in appeals about timeliness. The Secretary's counsel says we're not showing a great harm. How about the 25 petitions I filed last year, most of them because of bad address, who were ultimately dismissed because the Secretary will give us the document saying, oh, no, we mailed this 3 years ago. No, we mailed this 4 years ago. Well, we aren't compensated for that. We're not filing for fees on those cases. The court won't grant us fees for EJA under 2812B. Maybe 2812B we could get fees, and maybe we should start trying that. But under 2812D, they're not going to give it to us because the petition's moved. And so we're not getting compensated for that time. We're spending, I mean, scores of hours every month just fixing this. And it's can't seem to fix it. She can't even give a straight answer on how the secretary is going to fix it. And everything she has said doesn't work. They've done it. They did it. It didn't work. All I want, I don't want them to fix their system. I could care less
all
about
right.
their systems right now.
Let me interrupt you again. Sorry. What order do you want us to issue?
I want the court to tell the secretary that they are no longer allowed to send my client's mail or Betlag's client's mail to the wrong address. I want it to be specific. And every time they do, they're going to pay sanctions.
All right.
And I think they can't, that the prospective sanctions are in play because it will be an order in force.
Would you be content with an order without sanctions?
Yes, Your Honor. But I can promise the court, as soon as it's violated, I'm going to be back in a whole new petition filing for sanctions. But I would be very happy with that, quite frankly, Your Honor. That it makes it a little bit more work for me. I think it might be effective. I think the secretary's not going to, I don't think they're going to pay sanctions very many times before they actually fix this for all of my clients. They've proven that they can. The four that I named specifically in the original petition, they went into their individual files and fixed them. They should just do that for my next 150 clients or so.
All right. Anything else? I think we understand your position, but if you want to continue, go ahead.
Yeah, I think we can wrap it up right there, Your Honor. I think we got out everything we need to say.
Thank you. Judge Meredith, anything further?
No, thank you.
Judge Lauer?
No, thank you.
All right. We understand the arguments. They were excellent. Your written submissions were equally excellent and helpful to the court. And the matter is reserved.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The court is in recess.
Thank you.